I don't understand what the confusion is. This individual is a citizen of El Salvador. He was illegally in the United States and was returned to his country. That's where you deport people, back to their country of origin. Except for Venezuela, that was refusing to take people back and places like that. I can tell you this, Mr. President. No, the foreign policy of the United States is conducted by the President of the United States, not by a court. And no court in the United States has a right to conduct the foreign policy of the United States. It's that simple. End of story.
And that's what the Supreme Court held, by the way, to Marco's point. The Supreme Court said exactly what Marco said, that no court has the authority to compel the foreign policy function of the United States. We won a case 9-0, and people like CNN are portraying it as a loss, as usual, because they want foreign terrorists in the country who kidnap women and children. But President Trump, his policy is foreign terrorists that are here illegally get expelled from the country, which, by the way, is a 90-10 issue.
Well, Mr. President, you said that if the Supreme Court said someone needed to be returned, that you would abide by that. You said that on Air Force One just a few days ago.
How long do we have to answer this question from you? Why don't you just say, isn't it wonderful that we're keeping criminals out of our country? Why can't you just say that? Why do you go over and over, and that's why nobody watches you anymore? You know, you have no credibility. Please, go ahead.
President Trump, Trump's security advisor, Stephen Miller, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and Salvador's President Nayib Bukele all responding to CNN's Caitlin Collins on the wrongful deportation or removal of Maryland father Kilmar Brego Garcia to El Salvador's notorious SECOT prison. Last week, Democracy Now! Spoke to Brego Garcia's lawyer, Simon Sandoval Moschenberg, who laid out the facts of his client's case.
He was first arrested by ICE in 2019 when he was working as a day laborer in front of a Home Depot. There was this anonymous tip, the confidential informant, combined with the fact that he was wearing a Chicago Bulls hat, that as far as ICE was concerned, was, you know, more than enough to label him a gang member. When he was first detained by ICE, he had a preliminary hearing, and the immigration judge essentially said, well, I don't know what's going on. We've got this, you know, we've got this confidential tip. I can't be satisfied. I don't know what's going on, so I'm going to deny his release. So the judge essentially ordered that he continued to be detained during his immigration proceedings. But then he had a trial, right? And he won his trial. The judge ordered him relief from removal, ordered that he could not be deported to El Salvador, granted him withholding of removal. And the government, the Trump administration at the time, didn't even bother to appeal, right? They just sort of said, oh, all right, that's fine. They released him from detention and they gave him a work permit. And he's been working, which he's renewed ever since. And he's been working legally now as a sheet metal worker apprentice on a legal work permit ever since. So to the extent that they've got these allegations against him, they're not even sort of contemporary allegations. They're 6 years old.
That's Simon Sandoval Moschenberg, the attorney for Kilmar. We turn now to talk about the Salvadoran President Nayib Bukele's meeting in the Oval Office with President Trump and the cozy relationship he has with the administration. Bukele, the man who likes to call himself the world's coolest dictator. We're joined by two guests joining us from Washington, D.C. Naina Gupta, the policy director at American Immigration Council. Her most recent article for Just Security headlined "The Missing Due Process for Gang Allegations." And from Mexico City, we're joined by the award-winning investigative journalist Jose Alvarez. He is a Drop Site News contributor, has recently reported on El Salvador, and in a minute we'll talk with him about the elections in Ecuador. But we're going to start with Naina Gupta. Can you respond to this astonishing White House meeting?
Yes, thanks so much for having me. What we saw yesterday was political theater and a set of administration officials lying to the American public. To be clear, Donald Trump and his administration can absolutely bring home Mr. Abrego Garcia. That is well within their power and authority. ICE has deported thousands of people wrongfully in the past. The agency does have a process to bring people back. I have worked on cases where the agency has immediately brought people home where they have admitted it was a wrongful removal, as the agency has done here. And the idea that the president cannot do this is a lie. Now, It's true, of course, that the president and executive branch have wide discretion and latitude when it comes to matters of foreign policy and national security, but that power is not limitless. And this is an administration now that has violated an immigration court order that prevented Mr. Abrego Garcia's removal to his home country of El Salvador. They are violating a Supreme Court and federal district court order that have required the administration to facilitate Mr. Abrego Garcia's return. This is the Trump administration violating the rule of law and violating due process. And they're doing that by cozying up to President Bukele, who has a track record of also violating the rule of law and human rights in his country. And it is a dangerous and cruel tactic that the administration is using here.
And Naina Gupta, I wanted to ask you, the administration obviously is claiming that because they've declared MS-13 a foreign terrorist organization, that this now becomes an issue of foreign policy of the United States, not just of immigration. But this whole issue of whether Abrego Garcia was ever judged to be a member of MS-13, what do you know about that? Because we had his lawyer say, put out his position a few days ago.
Right. Look, the Trump administration has never proven that Mr. Abrego Garcia is a member of MS-13. Mr. Abrego Garcia had an immigration court hearing where that issue was not meaningfully litigated. In this country, we believe in a right to a fair day in court. No, you cannot disappear somebody to a foreign country, to a prison in a foreign country, based on mere allegations or sham allegations. Unfortunately, there is a history in the Department of Homeland Security of using weak and flimsy evidence of gang affiliation as a basis to deport people, particularly men from Latin America. In this instance, the Trump administration has taken that to its extreme. They have removed a person in violation of multiple court orders at this point to a foreign prison based on really no evidence. That was not the main issue in his case. He is not a member of MS-13. And if the Trump administration says otherwise, they should have to prove that in a court of law.
And can you talk about the ACLU lawsuit back in 2017 that led the Trump administration to release over 30 children and teenagers from ICE detention after it was revealed that the government's evidence of gang affiliation was essentially non-existent?
Yes. So, again, this is not the first time the Trump administration has pulled this kind of sham and flimsy evidence to deport people or detain them and weaponize our U.S. immigration laws. In the first Trump administration, there was a lawsuit that the ACLU filed on behalf of over 30 young adolescent men who'd been accused of being members of gangs. This was based on evidence of tattoos, and evidence in notoriously flawed gang databases that are based on mere allegations as basic as this young man was seen in the same area where there is a lot of gang activity. That evidence was so flimsy and unsubstantiated that the federal court in that ACLU case said, in fact, that some of those young men should just be immediately released from immigration detention, and others, at the very least, needed as a first step a day in court for the government to actually prove those allegations, for that evidence to be used, for that evidence to be fairly brought in a court of law.
I wanted to ask you about another point before we go to the drop site investigation and to how this meeting took place. And that is Trump's comment in the Oval Office yesterday that he wants to send violent criminals who are U.S. citizens to El Salvador, adding Attorney General Pam Bondi studying the law. He was caught on a hot mic. You have to listen really carefully, telling President Bukele, homegrown criminals are next, adding you're going to need about five more places. But in this clip, in the Oval Office, President Trump's talking about it openly.
We always have to obey the laws, but we also have homegrown criminals that push people into subways, that hit elderly ladies on the back of the head with a baseball bat when they're not looking, that are absolute monsters. I'd like to include them in the group of people to get them out of the country, but you'll have to be looking at the laws on that, Steve, okay?
You mentioned that you're open to deporting individuals that aren't foreign aliens or are criminals to El Salvador. Does that include potentially U.S. citizens fully naturalized Americans?
If they're criminals and if they hit people with baseball bats over their head that happen to be 90 years old, and if they rape 87-year-old women in Coney Island, Brooklyn, yeah, that includes them. What, do you think there's a special category of person? They're as bad as anybody that comes in. We have bad ones, too. And I'm all for it because we can do things with the president for less money and have great security. And we have a huge prison population. We have a huge number of prisons, and then we have the private prisons, and some are operated well, I guess, and some aren't. But he does a great job with that. We have others that we're negotiating with, too. But no, if it's a homegrown criminal, I have no problem. Now, we're studying the laws right now. Pam is studying. If we can do that, that's good. And I'm talking about violent people. I'm talking about really bad people. Really bad people. Every bit as bad as the ones coming in.
So, Naina Gupta of the American Immigration Council, can you respond? Can you respond to what Trump has just put forward, that U.S. citizens could be sent to the prisons of El Salvador? Naina Gupta, if you could respond, I know your IFB just dropped out, very quickly, to President Trump proposing U.S. citizens could be sent to El Salvador.
Yeah, this is just the president playing a dangerous game here. He is testing the limits of his authority. He's testing the limits of United States rule of law, and he is flirting with the idea of sending U.S. citizens to a foreign prison. Right now, U.S. citizens, to be clear, are not at risk of this. But if the Trump administration gets away with violating multiple court orders and refusing to return Mr. Abrego Garcia, that will be an emboldening moment for the president. That will mean the president feels emboldened and has the right in his mind to take actions like the one he's threatening in this moment of political theater that we saw yesterday in the White House.
So we want to bring Jose Olivares into this conversation. If you can comment quickly before we talk about your investigation of Ecuador and the elections to how this all happened, this meeting between Bukele and Trump taking the immigrants and now this proposal of U.S. citizens to Salvador prisons, and also the role of Eric Prince, the notorious former head of Blackwater, and his role behind the scenes setting this all up. He's back in the United States now that Trump is president again.
That's right. Thank you, Amy. Yeah, so it's been a long time coming, these negotiations between the Bukele administration and the Trump administration. What we've seen is that in the months even leading up to the elections, we saw Eric Prince visiting El Salvador and touring these terrorism confinement center, this prison, and negotiating with the Bukele administration. And it seems likely that that's when the original idea was proposed to send immigrants detained in the U.S. to this notorious prison in El Salvador to be held by the Salvadoran government. So what we saw is negotiations also between the Trump administration, high-level negotiations between the Trump administration and the Bukele administration right as soon as the Trump administration took power. And they were able to negotiate a deal in which the Trump administration pays the Bukele government $6 million to detain all of these immigrants that are being expelled to this prison in El Salvador. But as part of the deal, we also saw a very secretive kind of maneuver by the Trump administration with Bukele. Just for some very brief context, in 2019, the Bukele administration negotiated with top leadership of MS-13. Now, this top leadership is called the Ranfla Nacional, and they're known as the sort of board of directors of MS-13, this top leadership of the gang. And Bukele administration officials were entering prisons to negotiate with these top MS-13 leaders. Now, as part of the deal, MS-13 was able to kind of keep some territorial control. Some of these leaders were released from prison. But at the same time, in exchange, MS-13 agreed to reduce the violence in El Salvador, reduce the number of murders, but also they agreed to mobilize their forces to support Bukele's political party for the 2021 legislative elections. Now, these elections were won overwhelmingly by Bukele's political party, which allowed him to consolidate power even further. But a year later, in 2022, this pact between MS-13 and the Bukele administration essentially fell through. And we saw Bukele put in place his state of exception with these massive prisons, rounding up thousands of people and putting these alleged gang members in these prisons. But as a result of the state of exception, the knowledge, the information about this pact, this original pact from 2019 between the Bukele administration and MS-13, it's an incredibly embarrassing thing for the Bukele administration. So he's been wanting to kind of, keep tight any sort of information that could be revealed about any potential links that his government had with MS-13. Now, there are two major indictments in New York accusing the Rampla Nacional of various narco-terrorism and terrorism crimes. But in those indictments, they specifically mention these negotiations, this pact between the Bukele administration and MS-13. Now, what we found out, according to some documents from the Department of Justice that were first accessed by El Faro, which is an excellent Salvadoran news organization, is that on March 11th, the Trump administration dropped all charges against one of these top MS-13 leaders. His name is Cesar Humberto López Larios. And on March 15th, as part of this initial flight of expulsions with the Alien Enemies Act, this top MS-13 leader, was sent to El Salvador, essentially handed over to the Bukele administration as a gift, essentially saying, here you go. Thank you for letting us use your prison. Now, one of these top MS-13 leaders who could potentially speak in open court about the links between the Bukele administration and MS-13, here you go. He won't get to speak in open court anymore because all of his charges have been dismissed. And so it kind of shows kind of another layer of these kind of behind the scenes, top level, high level national security negotiations between the Trump administration and Bukele's government.
Well, Jose Olivares, we want you to stay with us. And Naina Gupta, we want to say thank you so much for being with us, policy director at the American Immigration Council, as we move to Ecuador. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we turn to Ecuador, where President Daniel Noboa won re-election in a runoff vote Sunday, according to preliminary results.
This event has been historic. The victory has also been historic, a victory of more than 10 points, a victory of more than 1 million votes, where there is no doubt who the winner is. And it is based on perseverance, struggle, work of each of the members of this team that seeks this new Ecuador.
But Noboa's leftist rival, Luis Gonzalez, the successor of former President Rafael Correa, is challenging the official results.
One of the exit polls gave us victory. None showed a difference like the one we are seeing at the Electoral Council. None. Therefore, I report before my people, before the media, before the world, that Ecuador is experiencing a dictatorship. We are facing the worst and most grotesque electoral fraud in the history of the Republic of Ecuador.
Daniel Noboa is a business magnate, heir to a banana industry fortune, who's made cracking down on crime his main priority. He's been condemned for skirting legal norms in the process, including declaring a state of internal armed conflict to more easily deploy the military. On the eve of the election, he declared another state of emergency, barring protests and authorizing warrantless searches. For more, we're still joined by Jose Olivares, investigative journalist and Dropsite News contributor, where he had a recent piece headlined Dramatic Video from Widow of Slain Candidate Rocks Presidential Race in Ecuador, confirms Dropsite investigation, in which he shared this video posted on X by Veronica Saraos, the widow of Fernando Villavicencio. She talks about her husband's assassination and the subsequent attempt to frame the political party of the former President Rafael Correa for the murder.
Soy Veronica Saraos. I am Veronica Saraus. I want to denounce to the country and the international community an act of cover-up between the Attorney General Diana Salazar and the President Daniel Noboa, who are allowing complete impunity for the assassination and magnicide of my husband, Fernando Villavicencio, in August 2023, just days before the first round of elections in the last elections. I cannot and must not remain silent.
For more, we're going to Jose Olivares, who's joining us from Mexico City to discuss this dramatic video and the presidential race in Ecuador. Jose, if you can respond.
Yes, just very briefly. So in 2023, Fernando Villavicencio, this anti-corruption candidate who vowed to take on the drug and criminal organizations in Ecuador, was assassinated in the lead up to the elections. And following after that, we saw supporters of Villavicencio come out and blame and essentially say that Rafael Correa and his political party were responsible for the assassination. Last year, Ryan Grimm and I at Drop Site News, we received over 1,500 leaked chats showing from within the Attorney General's office, showing that essentially the Attorney General knew exactly probably who was responsible for the assassination of Fernando Villavicencio. However, she let this lie, this rumor run that Correa was responsible for the assassination. And it was done with political motives, right? And so now we're seeing the widow of Fernando Villavicencio come out publicly days before this election saying, listen, the Attorney General, Diana Salazar, and Daniel Noboa are conspiring. They're politicizing my husband's death, and essentially blaming Correa and delaying the investigation so that Daniel Noboa could have some sort of benefit in the lead up to his election, which he won on Sunday.
And Jose, we only have about a minute left, but could you talk about the visit recently of Eric Prince, a Trump ally who founded a mercenary company, Blackwater, to Ecuador, where supposedly he was providing law enforcement and the military the tools and tactics to combat narco gangs?
That's right. I mean, Eric Prince's visit to Ecuador was not just to sort of provide some sort of security structure or infrastructure or training to Daniel Noboa's armed forces. He was also there actively campaigning in favor of Daniel Noboa. Now, what's interesting is that we're seeing how Daniel Noboa is cozying up to the Trump administration. He was there front and center when Trump took power during his inauguration. And we're also seeing how Daniel Noboa is requesting that the U.S. government send special forces, send the U.S. military into Ecuador to also help fight in this drug war that Daniel Noboa launched last year. And we're seeing also how Eric Prince is very happy to make a deal with Daniel Noboa to provide training, to provide services to the armed forces as they engage in this, you know, drug war that has been plagued with allegations of human rights abuses by the armed forces.
Jose Olivares, we want to thank you for being with us. Journalists with Drop Site News will link to your pieces at democracynow.org when we come back, the dark money game. Jesus of Suburbia by Green Day. On Saturday, the band performed the song at Coachella Music Festival and changed the lyrics from running away from pain when you've been victimized to running away from pain like kids in Palestine. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We end today's show with a new documentary series premiering today on HBO. Alex Gibney is the Academy Award-winning director of the HBO original The Dark Money Game.
In Mexico, it's a bite. In China, it's tea money. In America, it's called campaign finance.
There's a whole political world out there that runs on dark money.
When elected public officials deal with business interests, corruption and bribery take over.
Dark money led to the biggest case of political corruption in the history of Ohio.
In 2019, there was an investigation involving Matt Borges and Neil Clark. Neil had been one of the most powerful lobbyists in the history of the state.
Ready to f*** people over.
That recording with Neil Clark and undercovers, those were critical to connect that dotted line.
Every politician's got to have somebody that is a hitman.
The FBI asked me to essentially spy.
You're not like trying to set me up here, are you? That would be bad for both of us, but it would be worse for you.
And I thought, what is he going to do?
This was a organized conspiracy on a massive scale. But I fear this case is not a one-off example.
Dark money has heralded a new era of vast corruption.
If corporate America was going to reassert its power, it had to create a counter-revolution and take political power back.
We had a little Bible verse. The wealth of the wicked is laid up for the righteous. So let's baptize the billionaire's money.
Supreme Court rolled back rules on campaign finance.
Citizens United said corporations can create a super PAC.
Now, corporations could fund elections with unlimited amounts of cash.
One way you could look at it is that it's a fair fight. Another way is that both parties are corrupt.
When it comes to the power of big business, the fix seems to be in.
A tiny group of people have bought an inordinate amount of influence.
People with money will always have an advantage. Always.
Money is a way of changing the rules.
For more, we're joined by Alex Gibney, Academy Award-winning director of this new two-part series, The Dark Money Game, an HBO original premiering tonight, 15 years after the Citizens United Supreme Court case. I want to thank you so much for being with us in these last few minutes as you feature Jane Mayer, the great New Yorker investigative reporter, her book called Dark Money. Talk about what's critical for people to understand today as your two-part series premieres, The Dark Money Game.
I think what's critical to understand is that our country is being run by a small group of people who have an enormous amount of money, and they dominate our politics. It's almost as if bribery has become utterly legalized. It's pay to play. It's quid pro quo. And unless we stop the system of money in politics, we're done, because then our lives will simply be ruled by the people who have the most money. And Alex, how do these films relate to your earlier work, in particular, The Crime of the Century on the opioid crisis? Well, it was doing a film on the opioid crisis that made me understand that one of the reasons there was such an anemic response to literally the intentional poisoning of America by a few corporations was because so many people in Congress were being paid off to look the other way, to focus on the needs of their donors rather than on the needs of their constituents. So it was that anger that led me to investigate this. We found an extraordinary story in Ohio that's literally quid pro quo corruption, and all the people on the FBI wiretaps are saying it's good now because of Citizens United. And then we tried to look back at how we got to this place by looking at the corruption of the Supreme Court. So, you know, and I was inspired, as you say, by the great work of Jane Mayer, who's in the film.
And in terms of the what you're hoping people will do, especially this coming out on the 15th anniversary of the Citizens United case.
Yes. I mean, I hadn't originally intended for that to be the case, but nothing could be more apt, because Citizens United is the single most damaging decision the Supreme Court has come up with in the last 15 years, because it's destroyed our democracy. And we need to understand that in order to get our democracy back, we have to reinvigorate our laws, as many states are doing, in order to be able to end this system of essentially legalized corruption.
Alex, want to stay with you? We want to stay with you and post online our second part at democracynow.org. Alex Gibney, Academy Award-winning director of the new HBO original series, The Dark Money Game, premiering tonight. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
CGSF would like to welcome you to a new series highlighting local artists and creatives alike. It's Studio 6, featuring live performances and panel discussions. Studio 6 is geared to bringing local content to you via CGSF 90.1 FM at cgsf.ca/studio6. Visit cgsf.ca/studio6 to find the latest performance or discussion. Want to contribute to Studio 6? There are lots of opportunities for brands and groups to join in. Just visit cgsf.ca/studio6 for more info.